Everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I am David Johnson, joined by Alice Nelson.
What's up?
And Eric Astersteiger.
Hello.
And Mac is not feeling too well, so he's going to sit this one out, but we'll just have to wait for next week's Ben 10 update, I'm sure. Email it into us. But yeah, so the three of us will just kind of take you home for the weekend. In fact, this will probably be a brief addition, seeing that there's some kind of record-breaking pollen count up around here. So my hay fever is just smoking me right now. So let's just get right to it, Eric. Why don't you kick us off? And in fact, let's consolidate. Let's be super efficient. Talk about it with your entertainment, your typical entertainment report, and highlight which something you're reviewing this week.
All in okay. One swoop. All right. I thought you were going to say we should all just talk at once and just get through everything super fast.
There you go.
A three-minute podcast. It would be great. Not a whole lot in the entertainment front. I will briefly mention that as part of my recent coming back to comic books, I've been reading the volumes of a series called Sweet Tooth by someone named Jeff Lemire. And this is sort of a – this isn't your typical superhero comic. This is his sort of semi-indie comic that he wrote and directed himself, and wrote and drew himself. It's a comic book and a movie. I get confused. And it's the same guy that I first found out about reading the Animal Man reboot and really like that. And this is a really cool Sweet Tooth is a really cool kind of post-apocalyptic story, which I'm kind of burned out on. But this is an interesting premise. It's like there's this, you know, obviously the super flu, virus, some sickness that's wiped out most of the Earth's population, of course. But as a side effect, all the children who've been born since this happened are human-animal hybrids. And the main character, Sweet Tooth, is this sort of like deer boy. Okay. And it's cool.
Powers?
No, he's just a hybrid. So it's just sort of a... And then where it goes from there and the people he meets and the journey he goes on. There's a lot of interesting twists and turns and story reveals. So I'm really enjoying that. I'm three of the volumes in, which is each volume is probably five or six issues. So I'm really enjoying that. If you like that kind of thing, I recommend checking it out because it's a nice change of pace from your kind of zombie type thing or whatever. So liking that. And, nice. Speaking of reviews, also on the comic book front, this week I'm reviewing Spider-Man 2 on Blu-ray. This is
a re-release?
Yeah, something like that. I'm trying to kind of get my head around what it is, and obviously it's a tie-in, for the new movie, which comes out in a few weeks. But from what I can tell, it's sort of a Blu-ray release that compiles kind of what's come before it on DVD and Blu-ray. It came out on, you know, DVD and Blu-ray in its theatrical form, and then they released something called Spider-Man 2.1, which is an extended version of the movie, and this Blu-ray has both of those. Plus, I think all of the bonus features that were on one of the DVDs, but not the previous Blu-ray, I'm not 100% sure, but it's kind of everything in one place, which is
what nice. Does the extended version have that the theatrical doesn't?
I think it has just a few extended scenes. It seemed like as I was watching it, there were a few. I think some of the actions maybe slightly longer, and there are a few extra scenes of, you know, characters interacting with each other. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't add a ton. It's like an extra 9 minutes, I think.
All right.
So it doesn't substantially change anything.
It's not like a Lord of the Rings extended edition type.
No. It's not like that. Otherwise, it would be 2.2, I think, or 2.3, but 2.1. It's not a ton. So,
right.
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. A lot has happened in the comic book movie world since then. But that is a really good movie. That is, I think that it's probably, you could argue about its place in the, you know, in the top 5 or 10 of all time comic book movies. I might put it at number one because I think that it, I think it
more so than The Dark Knight even. Huh?
I think so. I'll tell you why. Because because honestly, Christopher Nolan has not made comic book movies. He's made crime movies with Batman. So I don't. They are comic book movies because they're as much as they're based on comic book characters, but he doesn't really go for what makes the
comic. So your kind of definition is kind of more the fantastic types.
Well, I guess what I like is I like it when filmmakers are able to kind of combine what works in on the page with what works in movies. And some have gone really, you know, really far in one direction or the other. I think Christopher Nolan has really gone toward the gritty, grounded, what works in movies stuff. And he's kind of left a lot of what's, you know, unique about comic book action and storytelling kind of on the sidelines because that's not what he's interested in. So I think The Dark Knight is a great movie, but it doesn't have that sort of comic book vibe, if that makes sense.
It doesn't quite fit in the genre that you think.
I think, I mean, it doesn't. Look.
How about The Avengers? Does that not, where's that rank for you?
It's, you know, I think it's up there. I think that the thing about my, I like The Avengers a lot, and I feel like I've sort of been critical of it since it's come out just because everyone else has been so effusive, but I think one thing that kind of bothers me a little bit about The Avengers is that it really sort of overreaches. I think it tries to do too much. And, you know, I think we see a lot of that. I've seen more and more of that recently. I think, you know, David, you and I both watched Game of Thrones, and I think the second season sort of began to reach a little bit further than what the TV medium can maybe contain. And I feel like maybe The Avengers tries to cram too much into what can be shown, you know,
two and a half. Here's an Avengers question. A friend of mine asked me this question. He asked me, why did the aliens want to invade Earth? And I couldn't come up with an answer.
I think because they needed to. You know, I don't know. I don't know. And so I think, you know, you have sort of this, with the Avengers, you have this sort of, you know, culmination of these five movies. You have these very distinct personalities, come together. And then you have this huge, you know, a threat that's written to be huge. And it, even if in the end that threat turns out to be kind of faceless, kind of not generic, but you have these like little guys coming out of a big thing. And it's like, well, I guess they're there because we need a giant action piece at the end. I think what's nice about something like Spider-Man 2 is that, you know, Raimi didn't abandon what made the characters interesting. It's very much a character piece. There's some great action scenes, but there's also a lot of just characters talking to each other, which I don't think, you know, a lot of movies, a lot of especially comic book movies and blockbusters make time for as much anymore. So, and I think Doc Ock is a really great villain. I think he's up there with the Joker in Dark Knight.
Here's a question for you. Yep. We talked about this. Scott Pilgrim, does that not get that? Does it get number one for you?
That's my favorite movie, but I think it's also, it's also not a superhero movie. Maybe I should have said superhero movie. I think Edgar Wright probably.
Spider-Man 2 is the best movie about a spider superhero.
Anytime we start saying best and worst,
largely, Spider-Man 2 is awesome. However, I think for me, the luster was lost because I so detested Spider-Man 3.
Spider-Man
3 was so bad to me, retroactively hurt Spider-Man 2.
I think you're not alone. I think that's probably, and honestly, I've never seen Spider-Man 3 because people said such bad things about it.
And so
I think that has sort of soured the entire franchise.
Maybe that's unfair. Yeah, maybe that's unfair. But like, to me, it was like, did the mask slip a little bit here with Raimi? Because the stuff in Spider-Man 2 that worked really brilliantly, like even stuff that seemed like it would have been out of place, wasn't there the raindrops keep falling in my head?
Yeah,
right in the middle. But that works. That was charming in that movie. But he kind of tried to do some of the same stuff in the third one, and it was an abject failure. So maybe it was just kind of everything kind of coming together. But I mean, I saw Spider-Man 2 with you in the theater, and I walked in and said, this is fantastic. But
yeah,
just retroactively, I think Spider-Man 3 just did damage to that. But I don't think I couldn't take issue with. If I were looking at it in a vacuum, that was certainly, and maybe Kirsten Dunst has irritated me a little more since then.
I think there are a lot of retroactive things in play. I mean, James DeFranco is certainly.
Oh right, right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, Kirsten Dunst, Tobey Maguire. I mean, everyone's kind of lost their luster. But you know, if you watch it for just what it is, you know, some of the themes are really, I mean, the themes are really heavy-handed, but they also were in the comic books. And you got really great arcs for everybody. I mean, Doc Ock is actually a believable villain you can care about. He's got a great redemptive, you know, scene at the end, great last line. So I think everything sort of comes together. It really has very much that sort of Stan Lee 60s Spider-Man comic book vibe. At the same time, it's really designed to work on the screen. So for me, I think it balances what I think most comic book movies have trouble balancing.
It is a good balance because I think 3 was like pretty terrible. I think 1 has not aged well either.
Yeah.
I think 1 on like, you know, is kind of dumb, but I think too, I think you're right. It kind of hits that sweet spot. So I don't think I could take issue with either any of your classification. Obviously, yeah. I would call The Dark Knight the best because I think it's based on. I think it sort of reflects. I think you're right that they do feel like these crime thrillers starring Batman, you know, for sure. But as far as the Batman comics go, you know, those are pretty. It's not like Batman was shooting lasers out of his eyes.
And, no,
you
know, no. And
But you're right. It is such a focused. Like, it really could be a fantastic crime thriller if you just change the characters. You know, I would agree with that. But yeah, I get what you're coming from. As far as a pure superhero movie, I think maybe the only one, you know, maybe Superman 78 gets the nod for me.
Sure, that's fair. That's fair. That's
but,
a good,
but you're
that's
right.
Great
Spider-Man
movie.
2 is up there. I would say top five for me. Probably dropped a rung or two since 3, but.
Yeah, I would say just quickly that probably my biggest problem with the first Spider-Man is the Green Goblin. I think that villain, like trying to make that villain, adapt that villain for the screen just didn't work at all, which is why I think Doc Ock works so well because the arms are very kinetic. And
I think that's,
anyway. And actually, one of the nice things about this Blu-ray is that it comes with this Sony eCash toward the ticket for the new one. So I will definitely go see it now. So
nice.
Job well done, Sony.
Okay, well, almost for our efficient podcast, we started superhero movies and best stuff, and I don't think those. But that was a robust discussion that needed to happen. We needed to get that out.
You guys had to get that out of here. You know?
That's right.
Whew, I'm spent.
You feel better now. Yeah.
All right, Alice, what do you got for us?
Oh, before I go, can I ask a question? Is Dark Knight, does that more closely resemble the comic book Batman?
Like, I'm not sure how much Batman you read, Eric. I wasn't a huge comic book guy, but what I did read growing up was Batman, you know. Loved a lot of the Batman stuff a lot. You know, watched the Batman animated series, for example. So I think it does. I think it's pretty, it's certainly closer than Batman and Robin, you know, or Batman Forever, or Batman 60s show. So,
I guess they're also,
it's certainly, there's wavelengths. I mean, there's a lot of different interpretations of Batman, you know.
Yeah.
Some are a lot darker, some maybe not as much, but, I don't know. For my money, I think it's closer to the spirit, the real spirit of Batman than, you know, like Schumacher stuff.
But. It's certainly closer to the Batman that's the best Batman, which is like the relatively modern Batman.
Yeah.
You go back to the 60s when it was all campy, and that was very much like what Joel Schumacher did, but it's not as good. It's like the Frank Miller or Long Halloween stuff,
Tim Schale stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I've just never read the comics, but I saw the movies. I was just wondering if it resembled the comics more.
Yeah, I think, Eric got it right, definitely, like the newer stuff for sure. Probably from year one on, year one was really kind of the defining moment, right?
Yeah.
Kind of really, so. All right, take it away, Alice. What else do you have?
All right, nothing as interesting as that, but I was watching a movie called The Innkeepers, and I'm pretty sure I heard Mac and Daryl talking about it on here, and it was in my queue, so I checked it out. It's a horror movie by writer-director named Ty West. He also did a movie called The House of the Devil. And it's it's interesting the way he does horror movies because they're not typical, you know, gory or even where he tries to just scare you.
No jump scares?
Scares like that. And it's about this inn, I think it's in Pennsylvania, that's going out of business. And the last weekend it's open, they only have two clerks working there. And the two clerks are interested in they have a ghost blog, and supposedly the hotel is haunted. So they're doing this blog on the last weekend, and they're going to try to get the spirits to come and show themselves. And there's one guest there, which is played by, what's her name? She was in Top Gun, McGillis, Kelly McGillis?
Yep. Nice.
Yeah. And she,
I can check that off. Kelly McGillis, alive.
I know. I didn't realize that either till I saw her. I'm like, hey, that's Top Gun chick. But she looks a lot different. Anyway, she's there and she's some sort of mystic. And, it turns out that the guy who works there, it's a guy and a girl that works there. He says that he saw the ghost one time, this woman turns out he didn't. And when things start to really happen, he freaks out and leaves the girl there alone with the crazy mystic eventually tells her that they need to leave because she's in danger. Of course, she doesn't. She goes back into the basement. But what's and of course is doomed. But what's interesting about the movie is that it's like a character study horror movie. It isn't a thriller. So you're getting to know these people who work behind the counter, and you're getting to know the Kelly McGillis character. And so he starts to get you to care about it. And there are some scenes where there's absolutely nothing going on, but it's very interesting. They're sitting behind the counter. It's an inn that nobody was coming to begin with. So the last weekend, there's only the one guest, which is Kelly McGillis. So you see them in their element a lot, behind the desk, playing on the laptop. But the way he does it just makes it interesting because you're always expecting something to happen. And most of the time, nothing does happen, but you're not disappointed by it. And then when the scares do start to come, it just makes it a little bit more believable and a little bit more palatable than just, you know, Friday the 13th or any of those other horror movies. So I found it kind of interesting, and then I started to watch his other one, The House of the Devil. And it's the same way. He moves slowly through. He takes you slowly through the pace of the film. And there is a payoff at the end, so, you know, you don't feel cheated by the pace of the movie. But it just moves very much like life, and I sort of enjoyed it.
Nice. All right.
Yeah, and for the site, I just reviewed another Nicolas Cage movie, and I'm a sucker for Nicolas Cage, even though he's kind of horrible lately, but it's called, Seeking Justice. And I got it because I thought it was going to be a good, bad movie to watch. And it turned out to be a pretty effective action movie.
Yeah, I'm looking at the really, like, Guy Pearce is in it, huh?
Yeah, oh, and he's one of my favorites. And really, Cage is the star. But Pierce is gives the movie the weight. He's one of my favorite actors. And he's just one of those guys that he's not a big Hollywood star, but should be. And you just kind of wonder if that's the way he likes it, going under the radar like that. But it's a pretty effective action thriller. And even with January Jones, who's pretty robotic.
Yes, January Jones.
Okay. Yeah, she doesn't hurt the film. And because of what happens to her, because she's raped and beaten, a woman after something like that will be kind of cold and distant. It sort of fits her acting style because she doesn't have to show much emotion. So it works. And it's a pretty – and even Nicolas Cage is good in it. It's like he actually showed up to this one and cares about what's going on. So, you know, if you have a little time one weekend, just Netflix it or something. It's pretty cool.
All right. Well, speaking of January Jones, let's say this season of Mad Men wrapped up. So is this some – either you guys watch this season of Mad Men? Eric can catch you up on it.
Want to, but haven't. Yeah. I will check it out later, definitely.
Alice, you watch Mad Men? Mad Men?
I don't, but that's one of those shows on my list.
Yeah, last season I was a little, didn't love it. This season I enjoyed it a lot more, though. As it wrapped up, I looked back and I kind of asked myself, what exactly happened? And then, you know, it's one of those things where not a lot, like with Game of Thrones season 2, if you took each individual character's arc from the whole season 2 and like charted the yardage, they didn't really move a ton. The needle didn't really move, really. So the same with Mad Men. It was very entertaining, though. A lot more focus on the office, on the work and stuff, which I like more than some of the peripheral things. I don't know, just very entertaining, though. I don't think a ton really moved everyone's stories forward, but some very interesting stuff and here and there, and one particularly shocking event as well. So which I won't wreck. In fact, more shocking the penultimate episode, more shocking than the finale, which we just finished watching, which is strangely vanilla. But
really?
Yeah, but still a good season and a lot more entertaining than the season before. And then for the site. Yikes, not much to report, though. I did just send in my review for, here you go, see if you remember this show, Rags to Riches.
I remember Rags to Riches.
Yes.
Wow. What about the orphans who sing different lyrics to 50s songs?
Pretty much. Five orphans adopted by a single millionaire, and they, you know, it's the Rolling Stone quote on the DVD set is precursor to Glee, so that must be why it's released. kind of interesting. Like, not the terrible experience I thought it was. Kind of charming and, you know, fun. It takes place in 1961, which seems pointless to me because all the girls are wearing obvious 80s clothes, you know, and with 80s hairstyles. So I don't know why they set it in the early 60s, but.
When I watched that as a kid, I did not get that it was set at any time other than the present day.
I thought it was a typo on the back. I thought it said set in the early 60s. TV favorite rags to riches includes musical numbers from the period, blah, blah, blah. But I had to double check because they are wearing 80s out. They are wearing 80s outfits. I'm sorry. So, and I, one final note, the butler, the lovable butler's name is Clapper, which seems to be.
Oh, wow. Name change.
I'm not sure what that means. Okay. So, yeah, so we'll see. So there you go. Rags to riches. I was getting a kick out of rewatching some of these early 80s relics. You know, very
I've never heard of that.
Nostalgic and transportative, if that's a word. But, yeah.
You got 7.2 stars on IMDb.
And including such guest stars as Bill Maher, Dick Van Patten, Jimmy Bonaducci, and my favorite, Richard Grieco, showed up to tear the place apart.
Wow, I've never heard of that show.
Yeah. So there you go. Okay, moving on. Upcoming DVD releases. Let's take a look at what's coming up. Cover art, June 19th, 2012. Take a look. There is, I see right off the bat, there's that Seeking Justice.
Yeah, there it is.
And Wanderlust, which you talked about last week, right, Eric?
Yep. The FX show Louie, season 2, is out. And that's probably up there, one of my favorite, you know, half-hour comedies going
on right
now.
Yeah, we stopped. Well, I can't remember why we watched all the first season. I haven't watched much of the second. I can't remember why.
Yeah. What I like about the show is that he's not afraid to have episodes where there's not a lot of necessarily funny stuff that happens, but it's really interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a comedy that he's just kind of doing his own thing, which I really like.
And how many Hey Dude seasons were there? Good Lord.
Boy,
too many.
There's number three.
There you go.
There's that cutoff point with all those Nickelodeon shows where, like, you watch them up to a certain point and everything up to that is like, yeah, I remember that. That was okay. And then as soon as you stop watching them, like, everything's just a mystery. I never watched Hey Dude, so to me it's like that was probably terrible.
I would strongly recommend just trying to watch an episode, even if it's on YouTube or something. Like, watch an episode of it because I would just because it is so. If it's so terrible to me, and I enjoyed it when I was young watching it,
sure,
it's unwatchable now. I'm wondering what it'd be like to someone who has no nostalgic investment in it.
I think
because it was unwatchable, just not when I had seen it. But I loved this show growing up.
There was a reason I didn't watch it. That I think my sisters did, so I made a choice when I was young not to watch it. So I can't imagine going back now. Do any of those Nickelodeon shows stand up besides obviously The Adventures of Pete and Pete, which is still?
Yeah, I thought Salute Your Shorts was kind of solid. I saw some Salute Your Shorts on like YouTube at a couple seasons. I thought that was pretty funny. What else is in there?
I can't think of any other ones. Why can't I think of?
You can't do that on television.
Yeah, that's old.
A bunch of game shows. Well, I love the game shows dearly.
The game shows are
like
a whole
arcade
different.
And just a Hidden Temple, which might be my favorite. You know, my favorite kids game show ever, just because it's brutally unfair.
And Nickelodeon is sort of like the MTV for kids in that it went through these different stages. We look back, it's almost like Rings of a Tree. You look back and say, oh, this is the you can't do that on television.
Yeah, that's true.
Period. And then it moved on to the double dares. And then it,
double dare, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah.
Turkey TV. You remember Turkey TV?
I do, yeah, I remember Turkey TV.
I remember laughing out loud at that, but I'm sure it's horrible. Yeah. And Canadian.
Danger Mouth, all that stuff.
Too Canadian.
Okay, well, there's another FX show which I've not seen. Wilfred?
Yeah, I never watched that either.
I haven't seen that either.
The Project X, which is the, I think it's Todd Phillips movie.
And this.
A movie that I've got on my docket, The FP. No idea.
Now,
what
I was curious about that. Curious about that. I have no idea. I thought it was Michael Jackson on the cover.
From what I can tell, just reading a little bit about it. Post-apocalyptic, and there's some kind of competition that involves like Dance Dance Revolution.
There you go, apocalyptic dance contest. Yeah.
So, what do you think FP stands for,
or do you know? Actually, it was abbreviated for like some location where all the dancing happens.
Oh.
We're all going to meet at the FP. I don't know. I can't remember what it's like. All right. Anything else? Once, going twice. All right. It really is not a DVD release of the week. Let's see if you get the correct answer. Actually, there's actually a bunch here. I will say there's a couple. There's a couple here, but Eric, go ahead.
All I see is Keyhole.
That was up there, too. Alice?
He stole mine.
Really? Okay.
Oh, sorry.
How about How to Beat Box?
That's good. Yeah, that's good. And I'm going to go with The Jerk Theory or underneath it. Oh, is that Kiara the Brave?
Oh, yeah, it's another one of those. She looks a lot like Shrek.
Okay, let's move on. Our ambush topics. Random topics. Don't hit each other. You know how it works. Alice, why don't you kick us off?
Okay, horrible road trips.
All right, I'm going to go with Terminator 3 as our heroes try to make their way to the Skynet to kind of prevent Judgment Day from coming, and they are just constantly besieged by the Terminatrix or the T3 or whatever she is.
Yeah.
But actually, that's a movie I have a soft spot for, to be honest.
I like it too.
Pretty much precisely because it is a road movie.
It's
pretty straightforward, and they just keep adding bigger and bigger things to it, and it just the pace is great. And basically, this is from another way for me to say I love Terminator 3.
I guess you can go with the first National Lampoon Vacation movie that was a lot of a lot of bad stuff happened.
Of bad stuff.
Yeah. The dead grandma on top of the car, that's my favorite.
I will say, I originally watched that movie on TV, it was pretty shocking to watch it unedited.
Yeah.
There's a hefty amount of Beverly D'Angelo nudity that I'm not expecting.
Well, it was, you know, it was 1980 or whatever, and it was Beverly D'Angelo.
Oh,
so it was pretty much you kind of combine the two.
Well, we got a couple of friends of ours hooked on Breaking Bad, and it reminded me of the first episode of the first season where Walt and Jesse?
Jesse, yeah.
Yeah, they buy that motorhome and they drive out into the middle of nowhere to make their blue meth. And Jesse tries to sell some to some thugs he knew, and they make him drive him out there. And they are going to kill Walt and Jesse, but Walt decides he's going to show him how to make his blue meth so they won't kill him. And while he's showing him how to make it, he puts together some noxious fumes, locks them in there, and they die. And Jesse's outside, knocked out, so he hears sirens, gets back into the motorhome, drives off, thinking that the police are after him. Then he crashes with two dead guys in the back, so he steps out, and he's in his big, giant, tighty-whities, and he pulls out a pistol because he thinks it's the end, and he's going to have a shootdown with the police, and it turns out it's just the fire department because a fire got started near where they were.
Is that the cover image of the DVD?
Exactly. That's it. Yeah. That's it. So that was a bad road trip. That's one you won't put on Facebook, I suppose.
I need to get around to watching this show.
Oh, yeah, I think that plus everything else that happened in the next four seasons is all stuff you probably would put on Facebook.
Exactly. That is an awesome show. I'm waiting for season 5 to come out.
All right. I'll go next. Balloons.
Balloons.
We'll go with the beginning of The Great Muppet Caper. Starts with Fozzie Kermit and was that the one you were going to use?
No. I'm trying to.
Oh, okay. It starts with Kermit, Fozzie, and Gonzo in a balloon, a hot air balloon, and they're just kind of floating and it's like here comes the opening title sequence, and they're talking about the credits, and then they pull the cord and they fall into New York, and it all kicks off.
Fantastic.
Well, mine's not so happy. I always think of Schindler's List. The little it's not a balloon. It's a red coat, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh,
thinking of a red balloon. Yeah, Dave's.
Yeah, exactly. The movie, The Red Balloon. There you go.
That's a good one. It's an excellent one. That movie wrecked me when I was 3 years old.
He's
so sad at that movie.
You're desensitized to all manner of violence, but you see your red balloon and crawl into a fetal position.
Yeah.
So remember that episode of the kids throwing stones at the red balloon as it slowly deflates.
Those are so cruel.
They're so cruel.
Two balloons.
My balloons, I'm going to go with the giant parade balloons in Batman, Tim Burton's
Batman. Oh, yeah, good.
Never quite understood why they inflated while they were belching out their poison gas. Do you know why?
It's science.
Okay, science. It's science. And I also never figured out how many people died after Batman gathered them all and let them off to float over Madagascar or something. So, someone's gonna.
Tim Burton's Batman was not afraid of killing people.
Tim Burton Batman was lethal. Absolutely. he killed many, many, many people. So.
Did you guys like Tim Burton's version?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it blew my mind when I first saw it, for sure. Yeah. And it certainly kind of set the table for the theatrical Batman, you know, that Nolan would come, I think. But, you know, looking back on it, it was pretty – you want to talk about kind of being close to the character? I would say that may have been further from the character than even Schumacher's craziness.
Really? Michael Keaton?
I mean, no, Keaton is great, but just Batman. The whole, you know, Batman is just built on, like, him not, like, it's so key for him to not be a killer. I mean, that's like the whole point. So, right. When you have him just slaughtering these guys wholesale, you know, it's really, he becomes, I don't know, what is it, like, James Bond or Jason from Friday the 13th or something. Plus, I always loved how his little Batwing there had those tin snips in the front.
They all laughed when I put that on the blueprint.
That's right.
They all laughed. Who is laughing?
Like, what is the possible alternate use for that besides gathering and severing, you know, parade balloons? I don't know.
Really, really flashy haircuts. Really kind of like.
I guess so. Yeah.
Our Batman and the Blue Angels to come in and.
So yeah. Okay. All right, Eric. Do you wrap it up?
All right, well, I guess my answer to the last one will kind of tie into this. Ugly Muppets.
Ugly Muppets.
Well, okay, I hate to pick on him, because he may or may not have a developmental disability, I'm not sure, but Beaker?
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's very rude, Dave.
Oh, is it? I don't know.
I'm just joking.
Okay, yeah. I feel like he's...
Too far, Dave. Too soon.
I feel like he's exploited by Bunsen. Bunsen kind of exploits him. I feel the poor guy doesn't quite have the mental capacity to say no to his tormentor, you know?
I think if he spoke English, he'd be fine.
Yeah, maybe.
I think I've always assumed that Beaker was like an exchange grad student of some sort. You know, from somewhere in Eastern Europe.
He is unattractive, though. Yes.
Yeah. Not too handsome.
He's not a looker, right?
He's an ugly.
I would say any Muppet from Fraggle Rock. Didn't they live underground? It was something about not seeing the sun that made them all kind of idiots.
All the Fraggles?
All the Fraggles, baby.
The Fraggles weren't that ugly.
Oh,
I'll give you the Gorgs.
The Gorgs. Well, the Fraggles were ugly compared to what? I mean, relatively speaking, I think.
Exactly.
Compared to the Gorgs is what I'm saying. I mean, obviously.
It's
if your wife gave birth to a Fraggle, would you be A, happy, or B, upset?
Well, I'd wonder how she got to Sesame Street.
That's true.
Or something.
Visiting Sesame Street.
There was another. There's another joke in there somewhere that I'm not sharp enough to come up with. Well, my answer actually ties into Sesame Street. Have either of you seen the Sesame Street movie Follow That Bird?
Yes.
Okay. This is a movie that it must have been late 80s, I think. And I remember seeing it in the theater for some reason and really liking it. So I saw recently that it was on Netflix, and I said, well, this is the perfect chance to revisit it, watch it with my daughter. You know, who needs an excuse, but there you go. So we watched about half an hour of it together, then she got bored, and I watched the rest of it by myself. But in the movie, Big Bird, for some reason, is relocated to a bird family by some bird organization that puts birds with their own kind. That's kind of the premise. Uh-huh. And then he turns around and goes, tries to make his way back to Sesame Street, and it turns into a road movie. But the family that he ends up with are called the Dodos, and they're these, you know, dodo birds, but they're kind of ugly. They're really these hideous sort of, you know, they're people wearing suits. Obviously Big Bird is too, but it's just kind of, it doesn't quite work with the Muppet aesthetic, for some reason. So
I don't recall those monstrosities, but
yeah, they're a little ugly. I mean, there are a lot of things. There's a lot about that movie that I actually forgot. And there are things in it that are really, you know, funny, kind of just one-off jokes. You know, and some of the stuff in that movie is, as you know, better than kind of any like Muppet movie since Muppets Take Manhattan. Mm. Not a lot, but there are moments. Yeah. There's actually one of the funnier jokes the kids wouldn't get is the Dodos live, the street they live on is called Canary Row, which is kind of
nice. I always like it when they have like a crossover between Sesame Street characters and Muppet characters. You know, like Oscar the Grouch and Great Muppet Caper shows up, you know?
Yeah, Big Bird's in Muppet Movie.
Oh, it is? I don't know.
Yeah, it's when Kermit and Fozzie are driving along.
Nice.
Maybe right after singing Moving Right Along. They go and ask if he needs a ride, and he says, you know, they're going to L.A. to break into movies, and he says, oh, I'm going to New York to break into public television.
Very good. Very good.
Hey, so right. Looking at a picture of the dodo. They are ugly.
Well, we have confirmation from Alice of the Dodo.
we got our fact checker on it. They're ugly. Okay.
Well, on that bombshell, I guess we can just wrap up this. Try to fill the dodos are indeed ugly. So, thank you, Eric. Thank you, Alice. Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com is the email address. And have a great weekend.